The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk to our good friend from the Sporting News, Mike DeCourcy. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am well, Steve. How are you?
Doing good. Mike, the people in Kansas City already love you, but why don't you endear yourself to Kansas City even more? As a Steelers fan, say something bad about the Bengals, please.
I will tell you this. This is true. I don't have to exaggerate at all, although I do have to estimate. I'm going to say that as a spectator, not as a journalist, because I did go to one as a journalist and some other Bengals games as a journalist, but as a spectator, I attended at least 8 Steelers-Bengals games during the time I lived in Cincinnati and was harassed in some form or other at probably 6 of them. That included my wife being struck by a pom-pom by a Bengals fan in front of us.
Wow.
Beer being poured on my wife and sister-in-law. And then just the odd, once when the Steelers lost, my brother and I being, taunted. I will say those are all factual stories. That is absolutely true. And the odd thing, of course, is that it's basically the same people who I would go to games as a Reds, watching the Reds and probably sit next to, and they were fine. But this I believe to be accurate as well. There is a really curious obsession among a large portion, a significant portion, let's say, of Bengals fans with the Steelers. It's really profound. Because I think it goes back to the Trumpy years when Trumpy played, and then of course, and Bob was a great player and a really compelling talk show host. But I think the fact that the Steelers were, that was the 4 Super Bowl Steelers, the Steel Curtain Steelers, that they kept the Bengals from breaking through. I think that really weighed on the city. And I don't know, I didn't listen to Trumpy a lot, so I don't know how much he brought that up while he was doing his talk show. I think he did it for at least 10, 12, 15 years, something like that. When I did hear him, he was excellent. He was really good. But I don't know how much he brought that up or whether that was where it came from, but I know that it lingered from the years when he was a player, that the city itself felt aggrieved that the Steelers got in their way so many times.
So, I'm just trying to figure. It sounds like you're saying "Go Chiefs" to me. Is that right? Is that what?
If you care to interpret it like that, you are free to.
You know what? I do. I do, good sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity to put words in your mouth.
I think also we should take the opportunity to get Mike's thoughts, just in case somebody's missed it in the past, on Skyline Chili.
Wow.
Because a buddy of mine, Dan Lolly, I'll give him a shout out, who is a higher up at Sporting Kansas City and is from Cincinnati. As soon as the Bengals won their game this weekend, he texted me and said, you butchered the way you ate that Skyline Chili last year, because remember we shipped some in and I ate it before the Chiefs-Bengals game to try it, and I thought it was horrific. I'd had it actually once before in Cincinnati anyway. He said I did it the wrong way. But Mike, I'd like to get your thoughts on Skyline Chili in case anybody's never been to Cincinnati and tried what they're most famous for.
It is absolute dreck. It is so horrible. It's an amazing story when you think about it, because there have been multiple businesses, the one thing I will say about Skyline Chili that I admire is that I've never lived anywhere that has a significant chain of what are essentially fast food restaurants based entirely on regional cuisine. It's all they're almost as ubiquitous as a McDonald's in Cincinnati, and you don't go to Pittsburgh and find 200 Permantes brothers or whatever, or go to Memphis and find 200 Corkys. There are a handful of each of them in those two cities, but you don't find them on every corner. So I will admire that they were able to build this business out of one of the worst foods I've ever tasted.
That's Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. All right, Mike.
But before you go, do you have time?
Oh, sure.
For my Rick Majerus story?
Yes, please do.
This is one of my favorite stories. Rick was wonderful.
Yeah, we always have time for a Rick Majerus story, for sure.
I went to Cincinnati. This is when I was living there, and I went to his hotel, a Marriott up by the Cincinnati campus. So I'd been in that area. Like, I covered the Bearcats for 4 years, and so I'd been in that area a million times. But he insisted on driving. Okay, so to lunch. And so, like, it was amazing. We're driving from the hotel, and he's driving through Clifton, the neighborhood where UC is, and he's pointing out all these different restaurants that he's eaten at, and that one's good, and this one's not, and as we're driving, and I'm like, I've never been to any of these places. I've lived here for, like, 15 years. And when we arrive at our destination, he chooses to go to Skyline. And I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do, you know, because I can't eat this stuff. And so I look at the menu, and I see on the menu there's, you can just get a baked potato. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome, so I don't have to eat this stuff. So he orders, like, a couple of conies and a bowl of chili or whatever, and I order the baked potato. And he looks at me, and he says, what are you, a vegetarian?
You're like, no, I just don't like to eat sewer meat dribbled on top of spaghetti some reason.
Did they try to put the chili on the baked potato?
They did not.
Okay, good.
I would
for
have
you.
Had to ask for that, and right. I certainly didn't.
There's nothing wrong.
Rick was the best.
That's right. We used to have him on the show every other week, and he was great. He was a great guest, yeah. And that's an awesome story. And there's nothing wrong with a delicious baked potato. I could promise you that.
I think we should tell more stories about Rick Majerus and the Bengals.
Let me...
I have some U.S. men's national team questions for Mike. I got all kinds of issues.
Before Nate starts talking about the next World Cup, we're going to go ahead and get to Kansas basketball
now.
Do we
have to?
I don't know if you can see how he's dancing around this. But look, this is it is very rare. I mean, Kansas lost their third game in a row last night, losing at Baylor on Big Monday. And so this is after they lost the very close game to Kansas State, but then got blown out at home by TCU, then they lose at Baylor. Just give us your reaction to that loss and to this three-game losing streak.
Well, I think the Baylor one really wasn't that problematic. I think that there's a lesson to be learned from that game. I thought they got a little disconnected during that one stretch in the second half. I don't know exactly. All I know is that 55 was on the screen for a long time. I don't know exactly how long it lasted. But there were several difficult shots in that half. And I thought the mistake that they made, and this is something that they have to think about more, like, you shouldn't have to go after your shot if you're Jalen Wilson and you're Grady Dick and you're on and no one else is. And they did, and I thought they did not do a good job of beating the only player that they had who was making shots. And I mean, I don't mean in the game. I mean in that particular window when they went cold, Grady was not that involved. I thought that they could have done more to get him the basketball in that window. This was like, remember, he started off the half. He had like 12 points in the first 12 minutes or so, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then when they got to that window where KJ missed a couple of layups and they kept getting to the rim and not dropping the shot. I thought there was a point in the second half when Jalen took about a 25-footer and he made it, and I'm like, why is he having to work so hard? Some of that's the defense, but some of it's just not getting everybody as fluidly involved as they ordinarily do. Baylor's a really, I mean, they keep bringing these like 6'3" guys that can shoot, and like, where did he come from? Like, don't they already have three of them? They need him too. They just never seem to run out of players. And last night they got punished. You know, they came up with another who punished the Jayhawks. But I think that the only loss in that stretch that's really concerning is like the TCU game. Like, how did that happen? How do you get run by that number at home? That was very odd. But the other two are road games in a league where you're going to lose road games. I'm sorry. I mean, the league is brutal. This is something I'll share with you guys that I think is unprecedented, and it hasn't happened obviously yet, but I think is very possible, perhaps even likely for the Big 12. I don't think there has ever been a league that placed six teams in the first four lines of an NCAA tournament bracket. I've only researched that to the two likely choices, which would have been 2011 Big East, which I believe the number was five, and then the 2021 Big Ten, which I think was about the same number. I don't think it's ever happened that you've gotten six in that window. And there's, why is that significant? There's only 16 teams in that window, and you're getting six of them? I mean, that's a brutal league. And so you have to understand that you're going to take some L's. I did not see a lot of the TCU game because I was doing some television work then, so I did not see a lot of that. So I couldn't really understand what happened in that game, but I saw both the other two, and I thought they were fine. I mean, they just they didn't execute well in that window I talked about last night. They didn't execute well in the last couple of minutes at K-State. This is a team that has to execute extremely well at both ends to win, because they don't have overwhelming size at various positions. They don't have overwhelming talent. They do have overwhelming talent at a couple. So they have to execute really well to win. And in those, like I said, in those two windows, I'm going to say ballpark 12 to 7 minutes last night, somewhere around there. And then, of course, the end of the game against K-State. I don't think there's a crisis here. This is not a perfect team. They start a 6-7 center. You're not a perfect team if you start a 6-7 center. And, whoever he is, unless maybe he's Wes Unseld. I love KJ. I think he's terrific. But if you have a 6-7 center, and remember, when the Bullets, then now Wizards, had started 6-7 Wes Unseld and won a championship or two, they had 6'11 Elvin Hayes next to him. You don't have 6'11 Elvin Hayes next to KJ. So it's going to be a team that's going to take some L's, but that doesn't mean it's not having a fantastic season.
Well, it might not be crisis mode right now, Mike, but, when you're Kansas and you're used to winning all the time, I looked it up. I can only find three other times in Bill Self's entire career at Kansas where they've lost three games in a row. And then you look at what's coming up. They're at Kentucky this weekend. They got number 5 K-State after that. They're at number 12 Iowa State after that. And then they play number 10 Texas after that. I mean, this, you talk about like this meat grinder and gauntlet that they're going through. It could look like a crisis to KU fans and everybody around it, just from the standpoint of wins and losses because of the schedule, right? Like, this is pretty amazing. So I guess the question is, like, what I feel like every January there is at least some sort of bump in the road that Bill Self teams come across, and he seems to figure things out and they turn things around almost every time. They can't fix the fact that they've got a 6'7" center, but can they fix how they get the ball to Jalen Wilson or to Grady Dick in situations? What are the things they can actually fix to make sure that they at least win a couple of those four games that we're talking about coming up?
Yeah, I think that, like I said, that the execution on offense became problematic in that window. I don't know, as I said, I don't know exactly how long that drought lasted, but it was significant for a team that is one of the better offensive teams in college basketball. It was uncommon for them to go that long without getting the ball into dangerous positions on a regular basis. And they got it to good spots for KJ a couple of times, and he put a couple of layups off the rim, which was very unusual for him. That's something that he's terrific at. So I don't get super concerned about players who do things 20 games in a row and then don't do them in one. I mean, that's just, sometimes it happens. Guys go cold. I mean, I don't know if Brady's had an overnight, but, I mean, shooters sometimes do. It certainly wasn't last night. He was outstanding. But there wasn't enough outstanding on the KU side. And that, you know, that happens. I think that other than just sort of powering through some difficult moments a little bit better than they did, and made, you know, I can't even say they didn't have that experience before, but that's because that's one of the teams this team does best. That they, as they said, like, they're not, you know, they're not blowing teams away. I had a friend ask me yesterday, how is St. Mary's rated higher in the net and KenPom than Kansas, not in terms of any particular stat, but in terms of the overall KenPom rating. I think that St. Mary's is 6 and Kansas 8 or something like that. I haven't looked this morning.
7-10 but, right now.
Okay, so how is that? Well, I looked it up and I found it out in 30 seconds. St. Mary's has played, I think, 18 games, and 15 of them have been decided by double digits in favor of St. Mary's. 15, I think they have like 2 wins or maybe 1 that isn't the double digit win. And then KU, it was half. I think they had played 16 games at that point. They had 8 that were double digit wins. It's a team that has to play that, because it's not overwhelming in terms of its production. They don't, you know, last year's team could overwhelm you at times because they're throwing 2 pros and David out there. You know, so and a guy like Jalen's coming off the bench, or not coming off the bench, but a fourth option. And so you could overwhelm teams at times last year. That's not going to be this team. They might, you know, have a day when everything's dropping and they blow you out by 20 or whatever. But the standard for this team is going to be they're going to play games that are decided inside 10 points. And on the days when they execute really well, then they can win by 10. And on the days where they don't, they might lose by 3. And last night was one of those nights, as was the K-State game. But both of those games were on the road against what I'm telling you are high-end 2023 college basketball teams. Right now, you know, as of Friday, K-State was a number 2 seed and probably the first number 2 seed on my bracket. Baylor was a number 4 with a great chance to move up. You're facing these teams, and I know that it becomes really daunting, but, you know, I mean, that's the league. That's what you want. You want to be in a difficult league. At least that's what everybody tells me. You want to be battle-tested. I personally don't think that's really true. I think you want to be in a bad league so that you're the best team and you win relatively easy most nights, and then by the time you get to March, you haven't broken a sweat every night. I think that's what history has told us, but that's the league you're in, and winning it will certainly mean a lot. And, you know, I came out probably 10 years ago to do a charity event with Jay Billis and Fran Priscilla and at Bill's request. And I still remember, and this was when the conference winning streak was probably 8 years in a row or whatever. And I think it eventually grew much beyond that. And I asked the spectators, there were about 500 people in the room, maybe a little more. And I asked them, like, raise your hand if this streak of conference championships means something to you, because basketball fans have become so consumed with March they forget everything except where'd you finish in the tournament. And I was really pleased to see that almost everybody in that room raised their hand. So if you win the league this year, I mean, you'll really have accomplished something, whether it's KU, K-State, Baylor, or whoever gets it. It'll be a massive accomplishment in this year. It'll be one of the great conference championships.
Well, since you referenced KenPom, he's projecting that there's going to be a 4-way tie, and they're all going to go 11-7, which is crazy to think that somebody could win the league going 11-7. But if you want to criticize KenPom, I think K-State fans would line up to do that, because they just beat Kansas. They're 6-1 in the league, while Kansas is 5-3. And KenPom has Kansas number 10 on his ranking and K-State number 26. How do you explain that?
Well, remember, Ken's ratings are all done by per possession. There's almost no consideration given. And this is me speaking to an extent, I mean, I don't know his formula, but winning or losing is not a huge factor in how his ranking works. And there's even a luck factor in there that he has in his rating that somewhat, and again, I don't like speaking for his system, but I think it's designed to somewhat explain away teams that win all their close games. Like Wisconsin a year ago I don't remember what exactly they finished, but they ended up a number four seed in the tournament, and they almost never won by double digits. It was like 25 4-point wins was basically Wisconsin's season last year. So in Ken Pom's ranking, their luck factor was really high. I mean, it was like top of the charts, and so was Providence, another team that won their league. Won a bunch of games, 25, 26, whatever the number was, and won most of them by very narrow margins. So luck factor is really high. So the number of games you win is less consequential in that. Then you go and you put Kansas State with their wins and their schedule into ESPN's strength of record, and you get a much different ranking because it doesn't factor in point spread at all. It doesn't factor in margin of victory at all. It's just, who did you play? Where did you play? How did you do? Which is the standard that the best NCAA men's basketball committee members, selection committee members, whatever you want to call them, that's the standard. That's the best standard to follow for whether a team gets into a tournament or not.
All right, K-State is in first place. They play Iowa State. They are in second place. That game's tonight in Ames. What do you think of this matchup?
Oh, boy. What do you first of all, every game, especially in a league this competitive, every game that's a home game is a significant advantage because you have circumstances like last night. I don't think, let's just use two games that happened last night as an example of what it can mean to be playing at home. You had a player from Virginia Tech make a basket that put his team that tied the game for his team, and then turn to celebrate that by pumping a fist. The fist happened to fly directly into the face of Duke's Kyle Filipowski, who was standing there waiting to get ready to accept the inbounds pass. And they reviewed it and called it nothing. They said it was incidental. I mean, punch is a strong word. He struck him right in the face, and they called nothing. That was pretty, I thought that was pretty interesting that they didn't do it. Or maybe that basket put them ahead and didn't give Duke a chance to, I can't remember the exact score, but Duke winds up losing as a result of not getting that call. Then last night at New Mexico, in a tie game, New Mexico on the road gets a defensive rebound. A kid named Udeze gets the defensive rebound. He is immediately surrounded by Nevada players who start fouling him. And there were at least two fouls as he stood there trying to clear space and trying to find an outlet so that they could advance the ball in a tie game. And eventually, in trying to clear space, he strikes one of the Nevada defenders around the face area with a hand, a forearm right around there. And so then New Mexico makes the very rough decision for themselves of calling a timeout and allowing the refs to look at the play again. And so the fact that there were two common fouls against Nevada didn't matter because you can't call those on video in college basketball, but you can call the flagrant. So Nevada got the ball and free throws and won the game in double overtime. So that's what, and no one can tell me that the fact that those games were on the road didn't play into it. That they wouldn't have, you think they would have passed on Kyle Filipowski being struck inadvertently or not in the face if it were at Cameron? I just don't believe that anymore. Not after what I saw last night. So that's part of being on the road in college basketball now. is that you can get, you can not only get rough calls in the moment, but you can get them on video too. So that's part of being on the road in the Big 12. Not only are you facing the terrific teams almost everywhere you go, but the possibility of something like that happening, or the very subtle pressure to favor, to make calls favorable to the home team, let me say. So that's what K-State knows they're up against going into Ames, Hilton Magic and all that. And I think that you've heard it over the years about teams coming into Allen. And so all that, plays in. And obviously coaches in the ACC have complained about going into Cameron back when Mike was the head coach there. So you've got to be ready for that. Iowa State plays really good pressure defense, whether it's full court or not. They are really good at getting up into you and making it hard for you to run your offense. So Marquise Noel will have to have a terrific game of navigating that. It's going to be hard, without a doubt. It's not going to be any fun for them to play tonight. Unless, they have one more point than Iowa State at the end, then it'll have been a delightful evening.
All right, finally, Mizzou plays at Ole Miss. They need, they'd like to get a road win in the SEC, and they could use a win right now after the loss to Alabama. What are they facing against Ole Miss?
Yeah, Ole Miss is not playing very well at all. I'm not sure they're very good. I think this is an existential win for this team this season. If you can't go on the road to get a win at Ole Miss, you probably can't make the tournament. And I'm not saying that they couldn't all of a sudden flip a switch and then go out. But, they're having to declare who they are because they've really struggled lately. They've been falling in my bracket very, like a gravity experiment. They need to win this game. This is a perfect timed game for them because they do need some road achievement. And they have that opportunity to play a team that hasn't played very well. Ole Miss is near the bottom of the SEC. They haven't been highly competitive in several games. So this is a huge circumstance for these Tigers because I still think they're capable of winning enough games to make it. But I don't think that they're going to make it at 500 or under 500. In this SEC, they have to have, they have to be able to at least stay a few games clear of that mark in order to make it. They got the good stuff done with Illinois and all of that, and so of course the Kentucky win will if the Wildcats continue on their present course, which is short lived but still impressive, that win will continue to pay dividends for Mizzou, but. They've got to be able to do more than just stumble along in the SEC, and lately they have not been.
Mike, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet, Stephen. Thank you.
That is Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk to former Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio. Joe, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you? Championship week. Doesn't get any better. Well, maybe the Super Bowl, but
very excited.
Next best thing to the Super Bowl. Yeah, super excited.
Very excited. And boy, the Bengals are already doing a lot of talking. Maybe they just never stopped talking, and I don't pay attention to them most of the time. But there is a lot being said, including safety Jesse Bates, who had plenty to say when asked about Patrick Mahomes. He said, "I hope that he's healthy. I hope that he's 100% healthy, so there are no excuses."
Mm. So do we.
Right, exactly. and basically, you know, by saying that, he's saying, you know, we're going to win. And so right. We want him to be healthy. So when we beat them, there's no excuses. And they can't say that, you know, Mahomes was hurt or blah, blah, blah. You know, Eli Apple's running his mouth. They're all running their mouths. And they beat the Chiefs three times in a row. They won at Arrowhead in the AFC Championship game. Do you think it's possible that after being the underdog for so long, now maybe they're overconfident and they are going to come in here maybe with their heads too big going up against the Chiefs at Arrowhead on Sunday?
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a couple of things on Twitter, you know, where, you know, they were calling it Burrowhead. Right, we're heading to Burrowhead. You know, come on, there's a lot of history in that stadium. You just can't co-op something like that because of, you know, a couple of good games you've played, right? I mean, there's a lot of history behind the team. And that's what I love about Kansas City fans and the organization, because it all starts at the top with one of the dearest people I've ever met in my life, Lamar Hunt, and his family, that Kansas City fans, getting it from the top and then all the way through the players, coaches, front office staff, have always been so respectful of the game and of other teams that it's almost, you almost want them to be more Philly-like, right? I live in Philly. Sometimes I don't even go to Eagles games because I just, you know, it's rough. It's a rough crowd. And they know it, and they take pride in it. But, you know, that's the one thing I always loved about Kansas City fans is their absolute respect for the competition. And, you know, Marty Schottenheimer drilled that into us week in, week out, day in, day out, that you don't throw your helmet out there and win games. You win games in January. You win games in February. You win games on Tuesdays, not on Saturdays and Sundays. So, you know, yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to see that because I know that the Chiefs fans, you know, do they like to trash talk a little bit? Sure, when, you know, when things get fun and debate and do those things. But there's definitely a different tone that I'm getting out of this Bengals organization than I am out of the Chiefs, for sure.
Well, they kind of remind me of the old school Raiders, you know, like they seem mm-hmm. to be leaning into the villain role, you know, like they're not trying to be liked by anybody. They seem to feed off of that trash talk. So what's the right way to, if you're the other team, what's the right way to approach a team like that when you face them? Is it to ignore all that stuff? Is it to put it all over the bulletin boards, all over the Arrowhead locker room this week, and get yourselves fired up? Like, what's the right way for the Chiefs to handle their business this week?
Well, the nice thing about social media and everything is you really don't need a bulletin board anymore, right? We had one. Trust me, Marty had one. We had one up, and, you know, people put quotes from papers up there and things like that, but you know, it kind of takes a little bit of pressure off the coaching staff and the administration, right, that they don't really have to have a physical bulletin board anymore. So, you know, if I'm in the locker room, we all see it. We all know it, right, especially in today's day and age with technology. So now it's about go out and win with your pads. Go out and win with your pads. One of my favorite quotes I ever heard was from a coach who was, you know, a perennial powerhouse in the state of Pennsylvania, high school football coach. And this other team came in and, you know, their team was doing, you know, screaming, yelling, hollering, jumping, making piles, jumping around, hooting, hollering, pointing at fans, pointing at players. And the one kid, now this was a kid who said this, right? This is an 18-year-old senior captain, turns to the coach and says, "Coach, pretty amazing, isn't it? We're 33-0 in the game and they're 33-0 pregame. I think I like our chances better." Like, so, you know, you got to win it with your pads. You know, you got to go out and win the game with your X's and O's, and that's what I'm most excited about for this game. I think you're right. The Chiefs team is going to they're the ones now who are going to play with a little chip on their shoulder coming into Arrowhead, their own stadium, as an underdog, right, a home dog. And I think that is actually a good place for this team to be, given that they, you know, have fallen to the Bengals three times in a row. I think we're in a perfect spot to beat them on Sunday.
So, obviously, Patrick Mahomes battling back from that high ankle sprain. We've been sent pictures of him working out last night with you know, no tape, no boot, no nothing. You know, doing work that his wife on her Instagram story showing that he's out there. And so, I mean, look, and it's pretty clear that he didn't hide. He could have gone behind the secure walls of Arrowhead Stadium or his house or his trainer's house, and he's out there in a public place, you know, working out. And maybe that's a statement. Maybe he wants that. Clearly he wants that out there, and he's got a camera crew with him. And so, I fully expect Mahomes to start. And if someone thinks you're going to see a less than stellar Mahomes, then maybe you haven't been paying attention to this quarterback over the past 5 years. But what's your level of concern for Patrick Mahomes based on that, what could have been a lot worse? I mean, look at what happened to Pollard and the Cowboys. Mm. That looked the same, right. And he breaks his leg. But here, Patrick Mahomes bounces back, and hopefully he's going to be at least as close as possible to 100% on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, if he's, you know, if on Monday night, you know, he's able to put pressure on it. Wade, he didn't have a boot on. Look, it's a double-edged sword, right? The first thing people are probably saying is, what is he doing? You know, why is he not home in a bubble wrap, you know, ice bath, you know, sitting there with his leg elevated and, you know, eating health food, you know, like get every single piece of his body back in shape for this game. That's the first thing people are saying. And then my feeling as a ex-player is I'm like, man, sweet. Like, if he's able to put weight on it, get a little workout in, and he's able to publicize that, heck, I mean, you know, does it keep a little bit of, you know, would it have kept the Bengals guessing a little bit? I think there's another, you know, I'm flipping back and forth, obviously, right? I'm kind of wishy-washy on this topic, but for the most part, I'm happy. I'm happy to see it as a player. I really am. But there's also those other little things that, man, you know, if they could have kept the Bengals guessing a little bit, make the defensive coordinator, you know, draw up some coverages and plays if he thought Chad Henne was going to come in or play. Like, you want to take up some mental space and even literally physical space of practice with them wondering where Patrick was going to be. But for the most part, you know, listen, the fact that the team is going to go into with confidence in this game, that Patrick's going to be as close to healthy as he possibly can be, or as he humanly possibly will be, I think that's a good thing. I really do. I think it's going to help build on the momentum and sort of add to the lore, right? Add to the lore. I mean, just like you said, right? Pollard, God, you know, forbid that happens to anybody, and sad to see that happen, you know, to a player. But, you know, just using it as an example, like, it could have been that, right? And it wasn't. Like, it's almost like, God, Patrick, is he human, right? Is he?
Yeah.
and I think that's, like, cool. Like, people are going to say, wow, we got to play against this guy on Sunday. Like, You saw it. Everybody saw it. There was no CGI to what happened to his leg. And here he is working out on a Monday. And because he wants to, I mean, come on. Like, you saw his reaction on the sideline, you know, throwing his cape. Which, hey, there you go. No pun intended, right? Throwing his jacket, you know, he had on, looked like a cape. Threw it down because he wanted to be out there. How do you not want to rally behind that, right? This is a guy who has $500 million in the bank, okay? You don't think that there's a lot of people out there that would say, well, you know, I got a lot more endorsements ahead of me. I got another contract in 10 years because I know, you know, he's going to be playing for a long time. He's like, listen, the fact that he's out there doing it, I love it. I love it. I'm excited about it. It's pumping me up. I'm ready to go block for him. I got one series left in me. Maybe a game. I don't know.
I mean, I'll admit, Joe, I thought, there's no way Mahomes isn't playing next week or this coming week. I just felt like, yeah, he's playing. But I also thought, like, just based on what we've seen in the past, you know, Ben Roethlisberger being a guy that would go out and play after a high ankle sprain, mm-hmm. and you just don't see that very often, but he'd still be in a boot all week. You know, like, anytime you saw him in public, he'd be in a walking boot. Like, usually when a guy has an ankle sprain like that, they put the guy in a walking boot. You never see him walking just without some kind of boot on. And here we see these, and I'm wondering a little bit. You're talking about maybe you'd like to see him play the cat and mouse game. I wonder if this is just me speculating. I have no idea, but if Patrick Mahomes doesn't want that footage out there a little bit, because maybe the Bengals, if they're expecting a Patrick Mahomes who's not mobile, they might be dialing up all kinds of blitzes and pressures and things to where Mahomes, you know, maybe this is called, you know, let's put some footage out there that makes them maybe have a little pause on that to second guess. Well, maybe Mahomes is better than we thought, and maybe we should back off on some of those blitzes.
Joe, if he didn't want people to know he was working out, why is he in a public place with a freaking camera crew? How many places, you know, how many places could you go to work out? Arrowhead, where there's more security than the White House. He can go to his house. Right. He can go to his trainer's house. He's out there in public, in a public place with a camera crew and a boom mic.
Yeah. They're obviously sending a message, and he's sending a message to the world and to the Bengals that he's ready to play. Now, of course, we could play this game all day, right? There's the, well, let's make the Bengals think that I'm playing, so they game plan for me, and if I can't make it through the first quarter, because we know he was starting, he would have put an iron rod alongside his leg and taped it to there to keep his ankle immobilized while he was playing. You know, we know he was starting. Now, whether or not he could go the whole game, right, with a high ankle sprain, throwing off your back foot. Now, those two games that he played with the high ankle sprain, and he had, you know, average 409 yards and 7 TDs, blah, 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 like that was his left foot. And, you know, we all know that, because I believe, this is what I've been saying all week since it happened, is I think quarterback is probably literally the only position you could play with a high ankle sprain, if it truly is one. If you truly get diagnosed with a high ankle sprain, I believe that quarterback is the only position you could play with a high ankle sprain. There is no way you can play, because you could go position by position and just look at the body movements that each position has to make, the pushing off, the backing up, the blah, 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 right? So we know that he was going to go out there and play. He said he's done it before. Now, my biggest concern was that it was his right foot, because I was watching him in the game after it happened. You could see he wasn't really pushing off. And you know, Patrick's biggest strength is finding the pocket within the pocket, right? Every time that's what makes him so special. And that's why offensive linemen love blocking for him, because, you know, you just take your guy where he wants to go, and then Patrick finds the pocket. It's not, you know, Patrick's not the whole, you know, the old school Dan Marino, John Elway, you know, kind of like build a half of an oval pocket around the guy, and then hope that you keep the middle secure and that you run the guys to the outside. That's out the window with Patrick Mahomes. You just take your guy where he wants to go, makes it so much easier for linemen, because if your guy makes an inside move, boop, he steps to the outside. If the guy rushes outside and one of the tackles goes the other direction, he finds that little gap over the guard, boom, he finds the pocket within the pocket. And that was my biggest concern, was being able to stay in that pocket and push off that right foot. But his arm's so strong, he could probably throw it off his left foot, you know, with 80% to 90% accuracy. So there's so much to unpack with this injury and this game. You know, I know I'm rambling a little bit, but I'm just excited that he was out there working out, and that gives me so much joy to hear that. Because I got to be honest, when I got on with you guys, I hadn't been on social media and really hit the airwaves yet. To talk about it or hear about it. So I'm really excited about it.
Joe, what's your gut tell you? What's going to happen? Give me a score for Sunday.
Oh, I think it's going to be low scoring. You know, as I was watching that Dallas-San Francisco game, you know, I kept thinking about what is the Bengals-Chiefs game going to look like, especially with an injured Patrick Mahomes. So I think you know, obviously your coaches step it up every week, right? But I think this week in particular, I think the pressure's on the defense myself. Let's consider – all right, we'll make an assumption, right? You got to do those things sometimes. I'm going to make an assumption that Patrick's like 80%, 75%, right? With that said, I think this it's going to fall squarely on the shoulders of the defense, that they're going to have to keep Burrow off the field. They're going to have to make plays. We're going to need perfect game out of special teams. We're going to have to limit penalties. I mean, the Bengals only had 9 yards of penalties and 2 penalties in that game against Buffalo. I mean, they played a really well-played game in the snow, right? Bad conditions. And I think the Chiefs defense is going to have to rise to the occasion and keep Burrow off the field, stop Joe Mixon. You know, it's Captain Obvious statements here, but they're going to have to do something different, I think, to protect Patrick defensively, so that when he is out there, he can be most effective, and that our running game, we can get that crank in so it can take the pressure off of Patrick, right? We need Isaiah, Jarek, we need everybody to have a great we've got one, if not the best, one of the top 3 lines in the whole league. And I think that it's going to fall on our offensive line, and it's going to fall on the defense. I think those are the matchups that I'd be watching this week if I'm a fan. So there's a long answer to a short question, because I didn't give you my score. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think the Chiefs are going to win this game 21-17, which is not like super low scoring, but lower scoring than you would imagine out of these two offensive juggernauts.
And tell people about the podcast, please.
Sure. Believe in Chiefs, B-L-E-A-V, on the Believe Network. And Jeff Vedotin, my partner, and I record it every week. We'll be posting it today or tomorrow. And, give a listen. We talk about some fun stuff. So, and I'm at Joe Valerio 73 on Twitter if you want to follow along there.
Joe, thank you for the time. Hopefully next week we'll be talking about who the Chiefs are playing in the Super Bowl.
Love it, guys. Keep my fingers crossed and go Patrick. Get healthy.
That is Joe Valerio. We'll be right back after this with Gary Lezak on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's check in with Gary Lezak. Hello, Gary.
I'm supposing that this I'm All Right by Kenny Loggins is because maybe Patrick Mahomes is saying I'm all right.
Hope so.
Any new news since I've been sleeping?
Go check out Twitter. I'm not going through it again.
Okay. So go check out Twitter, and you've got all the details there.
People are taking pictures of him working out at a public facility last night with a camera crew and a boom mic and no wrap, no boot, no nothing.
You're walking?
Still shots. I don't know.
Brittany posted something on her Instagram story. They're not trying to be low key about
right.
it.
People
know?
Are mad. Why are you retweeting this where he's at? I don't know because he's a public place with a camera crew and a boom mic.
I'll be honest.
There you go, Gary. Since no one can message you on Twitter, I had to drop your handle in the comments.
Wow.
This world is full of lies. It's just lie
yeah.
everywhere. It's like a high ankle sprain is a high ankle sprain, and it looked bad. But,
it's like the old right. Paul Simon
but
song,
here,
lie,
also,
lie.
Let me tell you something, okay? I hate to say this. And I'm not being mean, but I'm just telling you what I think, okay?
Yeah?
If you suffered a high ankle sprain playing basketball 2 years ago at the Y, I don't care. Because it has nothing to do with Patrick Mahomes' ankle. You do not have world-class treatment round the clock.
Yeah.
I don't care. Oh, no, hey, I have sprained my ankle playing basketball. I absolutely could not walk for 4 days. I don't care.
Right.
I'm sorry that but I don't.
I sprained my ankle about 16 years ago, and I couldn't walk for at least a week.
I did round-the-clock treatment from top medical professionals.
Steven, I had a high ankle sprain in my dream. It was a dream, though, I think.
I listened to that. He emailed me, hey, I had a high ankle sprain 4 years ago, and I couldn't go back to work for 7 days. No way he's playing. I'm like,
what does this guy do for work?
I don't know. I don't know.
Hey, Kirk Heinrich had a high ankle sprain in the first round of the NCAA tournament in 2003, and he played 2 days later, and then he played all the way through the tournament. They went to the national championship game where they lost to Syracuse, but
now,
he still did.
The good news is that it sounds like it's not that bad. Let's leave it at that. Okay, leave it at that. He'll be playing, and it's for the first time. As I will discuss the rest of the week, I'm certain, but the majority of Kansas City fans feel like the Cincinnati Bengals have us. I don't think the Chiefs are going to beat the Bengals. I think that they will, but because that's how I am. But I deep down inside, 0-3 is 0-3. I was thinking if we had a 7-game series and this was the elimination game, I think Patrick Mahomes would win this game. That's all we got to do. All right. This is a 7-game series. We're down 3-0. We got to win the last 4. We're going to do it. All right? There's no reason to think the Chiefs can't beat the Cincinnati Bengals, yet deep down inside, Chiefs fans sort of feel that way. So it's an interesting thing. Now, on to the weather, because I got about a minute or two. Here's what's going on weather-wise. We do have a storm approaching us. Significant amounts of snow across parts of Oklahoma, southern Missouri, and then extending towards the Ohio Valley. We're on the northern edge of it. The latest data has snow beginning around 8 to 10 p.m. tonight. Mm. 8 to 10 p.m. tonight. So watch KSHB 41 tonight, and it may be storming by the time their 10 o'clock news show is on. And so 8 to 10, it lasts till early morning tomorrow, and we're on the edge of it. So it could be up to 3 inches. More likely that is Lee Summit, south and east, and 1 or 2 inches farther to the northwest. Could be some travel problems. As we fast forward to Sunday, it looks like it'll be dry for the game. That's important. Right now, this could change because it's so cold. It wouldn't take much for it to snow. There's a chance of snow Saturday night or Sunday morning a little bit, not a major storm, but very cold, 18 degrees or so, maybe 20 at kickoff, maybe 18 would be my guess right now. So a little breeze. There's going to be a little cold out there, but I think those conditions favor the Kansas City Chiefs. So watch out for tonight for that snow to move in, but today it'll start out sunny with increasing clouds. There is your forecast. I did the weather. I had some takes. I love you guys.
Gary.
And we'll keep a track of it.
Gary, my friend Todd just texted me and said, I had a high ankle sprain when I was 15, and I never played football again. So I just add that to the list, please.
I mean,
did you hear about Sunny, the weather dog? She had a high ankle sprain. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
She was
better
in about 4 days.
Yeah, and I heard it was rough.
Oh, man, beat me to it.
Thank
All right,
you,
that was your dad joke today. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you. You know.
I'll bet you that ankle was barking for a while.
I had a high ankle sprain, and I was in a boot for about 4 weeks. I'm also a lard ass. So in no way does my ankle sprain relate. Back after this on WHB.